Greetings, everyone, and welcome to what's going to be a supplemental episode of the Wandering One podcast with your host, Link Flores. That's me. I hope you guys are having a wonderful day wherever you're at, whatever you're doing, and whenever you find this episode. Don't forget that you can check me out when I'm not podcasting on twitch.tv/linkib. That's LINKIBE. You can see me playing video games and talking with the community over there and just having a general good time all the way around. Also, you can check out the Streamlabs store if you're interested in LinkIB merch or Wandering One Studios merch, and that's at streamlabs.com/linkib/merch. And also feel free to hit up the Patreon. It's listed right here on the Audio Boom page and should be included with every episode. If you'd like to support the show directly and also have access to Patreon exclusive episodes where I'll answer your questions and maybe read some of your comments on the air as well. And let's get right into it. Let's start off with some of this extra content that I had that I didn't know would fit necessarily in the show proper, but I wanted to actually talk about just because most of it is arts and entertainment related. It's one of the things I'm very passionate about. We're going to start off a little bit with some gaming news. Some of you may know, some of you may not know, Super Mario Wonder, the latest installment in the Mario franchise, dropped this past week. I do not have it, but I very much do want this game. I've seen so much footage from people who like put out trailers and put out reviews. I've tried to ignore the reviews, just keep them muted for the most part. But it's got some impressive features. As always, you have the standard wonderful art style of Mario. The side-scrolling design is beautiful. They've taken some slight innovations with the way that the game plays, turning it to a top-down isometric gameplay type as well in certain areas, and just changing up the platforming a little bit. Adding some new power-ups is one of the things I'm very curious about. There's an elephant Mario that you can collect that is able to crash through barricades and store water in his trunk to water flowers or, you know, spray down enemies. There's a bubble Mario that can pick up coins and also trap enemies, and then a drill Mario, which, as you would expect, drills through walls and into ceilings. There's also two extra characters that are available. The core cast is there, you know and love Mario, Luigi, Peach, and Toad. There's also two other playable characters in the form of Daisy, and I'm trying to remember the other one. There's like a host of characters, so it got a little away from me. But there's two in particular that were interesting. So it's Daisy and then, the Toadette character. But then two that were really interesting to me that I just heard that are great for beginners, as Nintendo puts it, are the Yoshi character and the Nabbit, which is a character from the Rabbids franchise, I think. The Yoshi and Nabbit don't actually take damage. So if you're playing with like a child or if you're just having a super casual kind of gaming day and you don't want to worry about running off of, you know, the edge of the world or, you know, getting hit by every enemy. I think the fall damage will still take you out, but I mean, just not being hit by enemies and power-ups and, you know, projectiles and stuff like that. Yeah, this is probably going to be the avenue for you, which I think is a really cool inclusion. One of the better inclusions, honestly, is the 4-player local and also online co-op, which is a little bit of a departure for this franchise and for Nintendo, to say the least. I'm curious to see how that actually works. I don't know how many people I know that are going to pick up a copy of Super Mario Wonder, but if I'm able to find a couple who are interested, I'd like to test that out one day, maybe during a stream. That might be a lot of fun. Speaking of Switch gaming, I'm going to switch on over to Wild Frost, which is a game that's developed by Chucklefish Games. And I've played the demo of this before, and this past week I decided I was going to bite the bullet and pick it up while it was on sale. Just a couple bucks off, brought it in a nice round $18. I love this type of game as far as a deck builder. I do not love roguelikes. Roguelikes, just the very nature of every time you die, you have to start back over again. There's something about it that even the old school gamer in me doesn't fully appreciate, because I remember when we had the access code where you could write down this 16 digit code and then you could go right back to the last place where you died. So it wasn't quite a proper checkpoint, but it was sort of close. Yeah, roguelikes don't really hold a lot of charm for me. I just hate the idea of spending all that time working and trying and battling through something only to have to start back over at the beginning. Now, here's the caveat. I don't know how long this game is. In all reality, this game could end up being, maybe a 15, 20-hour game. For $18 is not a big problem. It's just kind of dull to go back and repeat all the battles from the very beginning, battling the same enemies to get to the same checkpoint, and then hopefully not die and progress a little bit more. But that said, there's a sort of charm to the story of each time you strike out, you play as a different leader of a group of expeditionaries who are trying to unlock a sun which has been trapped and turn the world into an eternal winter. I like the idea of the story. I also like the idea of being able to pick up multiple companion cards that you can use that have certain abilities and powers that help you battle your way through. The item cards are also really well done and interesting. The cartoony art style is great. It's actually crisp and clean, but at the same time, somehow still feels very rich and detailed. The colors are very vibrant. The music is very hummable as you start playing. You can actually hum along with it as you're playing and then almost instantly forget it as soon as you turn the game off, which is a nice change of pace for some games like this, where it can be an ultimately repetitive gameplay loop. But I think you're so focused on trying to get past this next portion of the gameplay that the music becomes almost secondary. But you will catch yourself occasionally humming along to the sounds that you hear. The one main complaint, like I said, it is a roguelike. So the one main complaint that I have is that death can sometimes feel really cheap due to a very stingy RNG. There are shops built into the world where if you've been able to collect enough of the world's currency, you can actually purchase item cards, you can purchase charms to upgrade your character or companion cards, and various other, sundries along the way. Like you can pick up consumable cards that will give you either a health or damage bonus or reduce the enemy's attack or defense. But there are also treasure troves placed along the critical path as you play. Sometimes it'll branch. You have the choice between maybe picking up a couple treasure cards and then stopping at the shop, or picking up a treasure card and then unlocking a frozen companion in the ice that you can then bring along with you. And while you can only carry up to three companions at a time, I found that the variety in the companions was fairly decent, but healing items and items that help you kind of, replenish your, what they call shells or shields, they're kind of scarce, especially early on in the game. Now, I assume that as you play through multiple times, which is the goal of the game, to keep you going and going and going until you win, you'll uncover some of those cards, but right off the rip, it felt pretty stingy on the healing items or the ability to even purchase or attain them. That also could just be a singular experience because it is a roguelike. So I take that with a grain of salt. That was just my personal experience. Overall, I think the game is wonderful. It's fun to play. It's challenging, but it doesn't necessarily feel like you can't win. It just feels that occasionally death can be a little punitive. But moving forward, I hope that I'll find more games from Chucklefish because they do have some really charming designs and ideas. I'd like to see more of their work. On the Xbox front, though, I'll be honest, I'm not really seeing much that's really making me excited. It's unfortunate to say that. I've loved my Xbox. I've been part of the ecosystem for well over a decade, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it every time, I've had a chance to turn on a console. I find something new or interesting for the most part. But even with Game Pass, there's a lot of stuff that I'm not really thrilled about. Now, the Persona series has a tactics game that's coming out, and I'm a sucker for tactics games as well, so I'll most likely be getting a taste of that when it hits Game Pass. But some of the stuff that I've played recently hasn't really been that endearing, I guess is probably the way to put it. I was interested with the idea of the Lamplighters League. However, playing it on the cloud gaming service was spotty and clunky at best. When I could see what was happening on the screen, it looked great. The music sounded great and the voice acting was spot on, but the horrible technical mess of just walking the character around was atrocious. That said, it could also be the limitations of the Xbox One X, but we've talked about that in the past. And then, you know, just looking around the Game Pass landscape in particular, it feels like they're either running out of ideas or a lot of the stuff they're putting out doesn't really excite me personally. There may be some things that might be out there for you. I was curious about the Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 beta, but one, I'm not about to pay for early access, as we spoke about in the last episode, and two, I think I'm just probably kind of over Call of Duty betas. And I think the biggest problem I've seen lately with the franchise is it leans so heavily into multiplayer that it almost seems to forget that there's actually a story component for the games that people loved and came there for. I know that I certainly did. I love the big set piece action that always made it feel like you were playing through a Hollywood blockbuster. I mean, even games that were not as well received in the series, like Advanced Warfare and Call of Duty Ghosts, still had some of that aesthetic to them. And I miss that. I feel like maybe they've kept up with it somehow, but the focus tends to be on the multiplayer, which is great. I mean, that's also one of the big staples of Call of Duty. And then the zombies mode, which I personally couldn't possibly care less about. If it's there and people want to play it and I feel like I'm up for it, I will. But I think there's something about the horde mode kind of gameplay that doesn't really intrigue me for very long. It's fun for maybe like an hour-long play session with some buddies over some beers or whatever, but I do not have any desire to try to reach the final level of whatever this is. I was interested in it with Gears of War, and then I found out that it wore thinly very quickly for me. And I was like, I'm glad that this exists for some people, but this isn't something that would intrigue me long-term. So, and then on top of that, there's not a whole lot, and this has always been a complaint for people, not just for Xbox fans, but for people in gaming in general. It's usually their one go-to punch that they think is like, oh, Xbox is weak because they don't have exclusives. I'm like, well, that's because Xbox exclusives, when they have them, are so great, generally speaking, that they last for years and years. I'm kind of at the point now, though, where I need them to step it up. There have been a lot of games that have been announced over the last couple years, and while I understand COVID's been a big problem, that I'd really be excited to see, but they've just fallen off the radar. Or they've released in lackluster quality, like Redfall or Cyberpunk 2077. Now, that said, Cyberpunk 2077 recently just got their new update, and I'm curious to play it, but the biggest bar to entry for me was that the original experience still feels kind of broken, and it's very stilted. I feel like it's trying to incorporate a lot of the titular series RPG elements, and they don't necessarily feel that they're incorporated very well to me personally. I feel like every time I use the ability that, you know, my runner has, I'm taking myself out of the most important part of the gameplay, the way they've shaped it, which is the first person shooting element. And even the slowing down of time doesn't seem to make up for the fact that you're getting drilled. Everybody is a freaking marksman for some reason. And obviously it's because they're all cybernetically enhanced, but still, it still feels like I'm constantly running up against a situation where I've got multiple enemies shooting at me. The game's telling me to do something. The UI's very clunky and floaty. It all just kind of molds together to make me feel like it's, even though they've added stuff, it still doesn't feel complete because the core experience feels to be kind of broken and damaged. So hopefully maybe there'll be an exclusive down the line in the vein of maybe Marvel Spider-Man 2, which is on Sony, which is getting rave reviews and probably, I mean, rightfully deservedly so. But I'd really like to see some good exclusives on Xbox at some time, you know, in the next 5 years, you know, before they switch up to whatever the new console is going to be. That's all I'm really asking for. I mean, it might be asking for a lot, but I hope that's not the case. You know, there's also some things that are going on in the world of movies and anime. My wife and I just started rewatching Game of... She started it, actually, and I was like, oh, let's check this out. Rewatching Game of Thrones. I don't, generally speaking, like to watch series over again. I've mentioned this before, but the first few seasons are actually really stellar, and I love the casting. I love the action. I can understand where, like, the gore can be a little bit much for some folks. Doesn't personally bother me much if there's a reason for it in the story. But I did notice this. I mean, I noticed the first time around, there's lots of unnecessary nudity and sex and gore. But, I mean, I do get that this is also a period piece, sort of, you know, fictionalized retelling of, you know, old English history. So, I mean, I'm willing to forgive a lot. But, yeah. It can be a lot to go back, even for somebody who doesn't necessarily get bothered by that kind of thing, to watch and be like, this is a tad much. And there's more than a couple times when I'm like, oh, God, is everybody naked again? Or are we chopping off more heads again? It's like, let's just get to the fucking point. But, you know, it's still a solid series. The later seasons, obviously, we can't speak to, but... I mean, the core experience is still great. Another news, Jujutsu Kaisen, a very beloved anime, dropped season 2. I haven't seen it yet because it really just came out this week. I love the first season because I really thought that there was just a core, just shonen vibe to the whole thing. It's your standard anime, fighting anime kind of genre stuff. But the world is a little bit different. The characters are a little bit more unusual and a little bit more troubled in some ways, which has its own kind of appeal. I think the only thing that really bothered me was that the enemies looked amazing as far as terms of character design, and everybody else looks very flat and one-dimensional. Now, I do understand that this is because they're also supposed to be school kids, but when you're at a school for supernaturally gifted, you know, how do you put it? Like exorcists, basically. I would think they'd give you a little bit of leaning, you know, a little bit of running room with your uniform. But, hey, and probably makes it very easy to replicate, which is fine because the action scenes are fantastic. And I could watch it over and over again just because that's one of those things where, like, I don't watch a lot of series over and over again. But something with that kind of kinetic action is definitely going to get my attention. Another things, there's a new movie coming out in December, which is way too far away, from Studio Ghibli, which is The Boy and the Heron. I need this in my face. I've been watching the trailer every now and again just to get a little fix. Studio Ghibli does everything well. I have not watched a Studio Ghibli movie yet that I have not watched start to finish. It's they're classic animators, incredible storytellers. And if you're not there and you can't deal with the subtitles, wait for the English dub because I can guarantee you it's going to be incredible. They always pull A-list Hollywood talent and it just sounds amazing. If you look at the cast list for just about any Studio Ghibli movie that's gotten an American localization, the cast list is insane. How they're able to afford to pay these people to do this, I think maybe some people just... hear Studio Ghibli and just go, I'll do this for crumpets and tea. Like, I don't care. I'll do it for free. Just let me be in one of these. I mean, their pedigree is so storied that it wouldn't surprise me at all to find out that somebody did it, you know, for a cup of coffee. Like, I'll just keep me, you know, hydrated while I'm doing the session. I'll do it for free. So I'm excited. December 8th is too far away. I'm hoping I could take my daughter to go see it because we both talked about it and we've gone to see a couple of anime films in theaters, and it would be really great to go see this for the holidays. Speaking of anime, Captain Laserhawk, a Blood Dragon remix, is out on Netflix. This is highly irreverent, wildly unpredictable, and actually quite gorgeously animated. It's based loosely on the Ubisoft game, and in the Ubisoft universe, you'll see a couple of references to Assassin's Creed and Rayman, and a couple other Ubisoft properties as you watch through just the first episode. It's big, dumb action fun, which is exactly what Blood Dragon, the game, was. If you guys remember the Far Cry franchise, Far Cry Blood Dragon is a very synth wave, neon soaked 80s action hero B movie adventure that you get to play yourself. And it's actually quite well done, even though it's very goofy and very cartoony on its surface. It's an incredibly fun game to play. I just need to see more of the series. I've only watched the first episode, and I'm excited to see more. So this isn't necessarily a review. It's more of kind of like my recommendations or what I'm watching right now. Then speaking of things that I haven't watched yet, but I'm super excited for, I'm a big fan of stand-up comedy. I love so much about stand-up comedy. From the delivery to the ability to take incisive topics and break them down to their core bits and get you to laugh at them and think about them at the same time. And then also, just who doesn't like a good fart joke, right? Bill Burr is one of my favorite comedians. He also used to write for Dave Chappelle on The Chappelle Show, and you might also remember him from his short stint in The Mandalorian. He has a new film out right now called Old Dads, which is really interesting because Bill Burr himself is an old dad, being in his mid-50s and having two children that are under the age of 7. He kind of writes from his own unique perspective and his own experiences, which makes it look really obviously relatable, because he's telling more of his own personal kind of reflections on things, but obviously with a humorous and fictional twist. But also looks really funny because Bill Burr is just comedy gold. I can't wait to see more of it. So hopefully when I get a chance, like, I won't just be watching trailers. I'm going to try to see if I can get a watch of it before Wednesday's episode, but we'll see. A little bit of music stuff. I was listening to some music the other day, just driving around, running errands. And I started to realize just how much music I missed out on when I was in my, like, maybe my grade school to, like, high school years. And then when I got out of high school and went to college and was out on my own, just how much of it had actually passed me by because it wasn't, quote unquote, acceptable. I mean, this isn't a knock on my parents. They were doing their best to try to keep me sheltered from things that might have, you know, damaged me mentally or emotionally or whatever. I understand the process, but I also felt like it kind of, like, I didn't feel black enough. I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody. But, you know, growing up as, you know, a teenager in military communities and whatnot, and being half black, half Mexican, I would get around my other relatives and cousins and, you know, their friends and even people that I knew at school. And I was always called the whitest black person they'd ever met. And I know that they thought that that was supposed to be some kind of compliment, but it really, you kind of grinned and smiled and then it stung because the whitest black people you ever met were also the most cartoonish black people you'd ever met. And by meeting, I mean, you'd see them on television. You'd see the Carlton Bankses or the Steve Urkels of the world. And that's what they meant. They meant that you were like those characters, which were really just joke characters. They weren't supposed to be incredibly well fleshed out in the most part, but it was also to lampoon, you know, black people who were quote unquote fitting in. Or who weren't like the other ones. You weren't cool if you were like them, you know? And that kind of stung a little bit. I didn't know any of the music. I didn't know any of the fashion trends, you know, and I didn't fit in with them because of that. And the more I listen back on it, I'm like, you know, I'll listen back to some old classic Jay-Z music. Just the stuff that was coming out like when I was in, you know, college and whatnot. I'm like, in high school, I'm like, I missed so much of this. That I started doing a bunch of deep dives on other bands that I had missed out on. And I knew that I probably could have gotten a hold of, but we just didn't, you know. Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul, Foo Schnickens, which is a weird off the beaten track kind of sideways kind of thing. Mobb Deep. I mean, obviously, I listened to a lot of Wu-Tang when I could get a hold of it, you know. Just some KRS-One. I mean, I went through like a whole crazy spiraling deep dive. I was catching old Nas tracks that I had never even heard of before. It was amazing. I suggest if you haven't had a chance maybe one weekend when you're like, you know, I don't really know enough about this genre of music and it's something that's close to you or close, feel like it's close to your heart. Take a little time and pick a couple of artists and go dig back into their catalogs and check them out. Like, I don't know what it was, but just that little bit of time that I spent driving around in the car kind of connected something that I felt like I'd lost or missed out on when I was growing up. And it was really a cool experience. And because I was doing that, I was hearing all these great samples from bands that were, you know, the stuff that my parents would have listened to, but also that I would have heard because I'm a child of the 70s. You guys probably remember I'm an old dude, but I would catch something from, you know, Ashford and Simpson, or I'd hear something from the Temptations or a Donna Ross sample. And then one of the things I caught was the Isley Brothers samples. So much Isley Brothers music has been sampled throughout hip hop. It's almost insane. And the more I heard of it, the more I was like, I need to hear more of it. So that Isley Brothers is another band that I'm going to be checking out and digging a little bit more into. And also I was looking at how some music that's a little bit off the beaten track, but also has like an older feel that still somehow feels modern, has been popping up a little bit more into my own world. And one of the things I remembered was a group, an artist called Pokey LaFarge, and it's pretty easy to find, did a Tiny Desk, what do you call it? A Tiny Desk recording on NPR radio a while back, a long time ago. But they have a song called Something in the Water, which is a great jumping on point. And then from there, just kind of navigate around through Pokey LaFarge's catalog and see what you like, see what you don't like. Let me know what you think. Also, throw me some suggestions if you have any comments that you want to leave on your platform or whatever. If you have an opportunity to reach out to me, feel free to do so. If you got any suggestions for some music you think I might like, I'd be interested. I have pretty broad ranging tastes, so there's not a whole lot that I won't listen to. And with that, as we're talking about arts and entertainment, I know you guys know that I have a Twitch channel, but here's another thing you probably didn't know. I also do a D&D stream built in the Star Wars universe with some friends of mine from the Nerdworks Media channel. And that's works with a U instead of an O. We do this. We try to do this every Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard. But lately, life has gotten in the way. Things have been a little bananas. And we are still going into the holiday season, so we're going to be sporadic at best. However, we've been crafting a tale with two Jedi Knights and one roguish kind of rapscallion. Since we've lost our combat droid, one of our buddies that decided he needed to take a step back from the game. Now it's just the three of us and our DM, Kenobi's Nook. We're over there on the Nerdworks Media channel on Twitch, Sundays at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard at twitch.tv/Nerdworks Media. And that's work spelled with a U instead of with an O. Feel free to stop over and check us out. I don't know that our VODs are ushering right now. So if you want to catch us, I think the only way you can really do it is live. So keep an eye out. That will hopefully be going down this coming Sunday. Because we had a session last night, and I was hoping it might, maybe it'll be up, but check us out on the 29th of October if you have an opportunity. And that's going to do it for this supplemental episode, a little shorter than the usual ones, but I appreciate everybody all the same. Don't forget, check me out on Twitch, twitch.tv/linkib. I'm there 4 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, trying to shoot for 3 p.m. Eastern Standard. Check out the Streamlabs store for merch if you're interested. That's also on the Twitch page if you're missing it. And it'll be on the description here on Audioboom. And the Patreon. Thank you for my first ever patron. I appreciate you so much. And I can't wait to get your questions so I can dig through them and answer them for the first ever Patreon exclusive episode. If you're able to view the posts on Patreon, you can either comment there or message me there to get your questions in until I'm able to get my own email address for the show. And hey, you know what? Thank you. I appreciate each and every one of you. I appreciate you all for like just listening or even just sharing it with somebody, sharing it with your social networks. That really does help a lot. It raises awareness about the show. And as I start to produce episodes on a more consistent basis and get into the swing of recording on a, you know, on that Wednesday to Sunday schedule, I feel like it's going to really take off. And I just want to say I appreciate every one of you. Thank you so much for everything that you've done. You know what? We're coming up on the holiday right now. So why not share the podcast with somebody at a Halloween party? You know? Maybe if you see somebody who's got like I don't know, it would be a really dated reference now because Game of Thrones has been gone for so long. Hey, maybe you see somebody dressed up as Cersei Lannister, or maybe you see somebody dressed up as a character from a video game or something like that. Say, hey, you know, I know this person who does this podcast about blah, blah, blah. You might want to check them out and tell them to look up the Wandering One podcast on their social, on their platform of choice for podcasting, or they can catch me right here on Audio Boom. As always, I have been Link IB. You guys have been amazing, and I hope I catch you a little bit further on down the line. Thank you so much, and I'll see you in the next one.